I am mindful that to be asked once to speak for a group is an honor, but to be asked to speak the next year is the greatest compliment a speaker could ever receive, and I thank the Historic Bostons for this invitation to address you again on this interfaith celebration. But my happiness was actually fairly short-lived when I was told that my topic this year would be, and they had a glint in their eye of happiness, Puritan governance. That's a barn burner. But I had something up my sleeve. When Teddy Kennedy died, his family had the beautiful intuition to wind his cortege through the streets of Boston, familiar sights of his brother's career and his career and Bobby's career. And it reminded me of the words that John Kennedy, a young man elected to the presidency, gave right before he went to Washington to his fellow Massachusetts citizens. It's a beautiful address, I think almost the equal of Lincoln's farewell to the citizens of Springfield, Illinois, when he went to Washington and, of course, was never to return. And Kennedy talked a lot about, in his farewell, to the people that had bred him and understood him and that had been nurturing his historical sensibility. For please remember that Kennedy was an historian as well as president. He quoted Pericles' speaking to the people of Athens, "We do not imitate, for we are a model to others." He was speaking with pride about a certain intuition and power and strength in the Massachusetts story and the colonists of Mass Bay. The people that came to that near peninsula of Shawmut 379 years ago and changed history forever. Now the great paradox, the irony, was that those Puritan settlers would have been aghast that a young Roman Catholic could possibly be the magistrate of this nation. You don't have to read in Puritan texts for long before you get to the great Satan of Popery. But that's indeed what I want to talk about this morning. Because the fervor of the Puritan spirit, their desire to worship God as they saw and as they were inspired to do in their errand into the wilderness, in fact, was precisely what created our separation of church and state, that could have made, so many hundreds of years later, the election of a John Kennedy possible. In John Winthrop's evocative phrase, this was to be a shining city on the hill where people were to look. The world was to be looking on. And we sometimes interpret that as pride, even as hubris. But if you read the speech carefully, that's not what it was about. It was with a deep humility that he basically established the fact that this experiment, and that's what it was, an experiment, could fail and flounder to the eternal shame of the Almighty, or it could prosper, and by doing so, change the world. John Adams talked about those who heard this speech on the Arbella. The grand scene and design of Providence for the illumination of mankind over the earth. That's what the revolutionary generation thought, looking back. To be part of the Puritan path, one of redemption, a sense of unfolding prophecy. Now, some among us this morning may first be asking, Stephen, how do you know that the Puritans weren't that important in the first place? Well, I go to Herman Melville, one of the great writers in American history, and he was not from Massachusetts. He said, we Americans are the peculiar chosen people, the Israel of our time. We bear the ark of the liberties of the world. Is this true? I can't tell you that it's true. All I can tell you is it is sunken so deep into the American soul that the beliefs and fervor and hopes of the Mass-Bay colonists, in fact, through their dogged strength, dedication, and historical good fortune, they have made us who we are today. They looked at history as a story of redemption, of exile, of conversion, and of covenant. Our own Cotton Mather said, when he wrote down this story for the very first time, it must live in our history. And it has. When Ronald Reagan invoked John Winthrop's words throughout his career of the shining city on a hill, and when TR stated, we stand at Armageddon and battle for the Lord, over and over again, we have had this inner script so deeply in us that we sometimes hardly even recognize it. But in times of historical stress and anguish and a sense of renewal, this Puritan instinct comes to the fore. Listen to John Kennedy in his first inaugural address, that we would, quote, pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and success of liberty. This deep American dream, it is our oldest impulse. Some have called it manifest destiny. Some have called it the Redeemer Nation. Lincoln, in the maelstrom of the Civil War, said, this battle is not about abolition and slavery. It is literally about the liberation of people around the world. He used this phrase, it is not just for ourselves, but, quote, for a vast future also. Remember, the eyes of the world were upon us. That is what Winthrop said. But it has always been a double-edged promise to see what God's people would do and to see if they could possibly live up to the challenge, not just in the eyes of the world, but in the ultimate judgment. You see, to be a Puritan was not an easy task. It was taking on the hardest of all endeavors. It was to possibly achieve God's will in this world. And this commonwealth, it was to be an agent of transformation of the world itself. De Tocqueville, when he traveled through early America, he noted, when he went in all the states of this young nation, our peculiar and powerful joining of what he called the spirit of religion and the spirit of liberty. G.K. Chesterton in the 1920s, said, America is a nation with the soul of a church. This is not always a great thing, but it is sometimes the source of our greatness. We are pressed sometimes, and I think about our English visitors, I think about our friend Maria from Greece, I think about many people who probably around the world who look at the American psyche, and sometimes they wonder about us. And sometimes it is even possible, and I know this is a shock, that people sometimes think cynically of why Americans do what they do, especially in our foreign policy. But you don't have to read in the Puritan logs for very long to realize there is not much cynicism in the American soul. But there is providence. And to understand us, you need to understand those Puritans who went on their errand into the wilderness because they have made us who we are. From the Arbella on to today, we seem to be to ourselves a people set apart on a providential mission. Samuel Danforth in 1670 said we should be consecrated to God and set apart for his worship and his service. It is the same echo that goes into FDR. Following the Great Depression and the advent of the Second World War, when he told us that we had a rendezvous with destiny, it is where that instinct came for those American boys who are now buried above the hillside upon the beaches of Normandy. And it was also the instinct that George W. Bush, in the aftermath of 9/11, we had the celebration and remembrance only several days ago of the horrors of 9/11. So it doesn't take much for the American to go back deep into our soul and remember while we reacted when our president, George W. Bush, said, America is a nation on a mission, and the mission comes from our most basic beliefs. And for ill and for good fortune, and you can judge the American goal as you wish, in your own freedom. The reality is you don't have to look very far to recognize this deep sense of mission in our hearts. But that's not all. The Puritan enterprise was not only founded on this unique sense of being set apart for service, but it also was a sense of special destiny in this biblical prophetic language of redemption and covenant. When Anne Hutchinson was exiled out of Massachusetts, it's because she became the ultimate Puritan. Because Puritanism was based on a personal, experiential acknowledgement of a one-to-one relationship with the ultimate, with God. Immediate, personal revelation. It wasn't about popes. It wasn't about magistrates. It wasn't about bishops. It was about what you as an individual experienced. It is hard to believe, but absolutely true, that in the Puritan era, these words came into English language for the first time. Self-affection, self-confidence, self-credit, self-honor, self-practice, self-safety, self-determination, and that good old Puritan classic, self-denial. This intense focus on the self was not one of self-congratulation or pride, far from it. It was a focus on the individual experience and personal responsibility. Now, one divine talked about holy despair with ourselves. That's a classic Puritan phrase there. But it does lead to self-knowledge,